Frank and Lori, I just want to thank Sally and EDF for putting on another great function last night. It was real nice. I think this is the third year in a row we've been down there, and we've gotten to watch the progress of the restoration work. So thank you, Sally. Okay, Frank.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As always, hearing is behind tab 5. Quite a few documents there. The first one we'll be working off of is, I believe it's number 6, which is the committee report, two-day report from the other day. Before we get into all the committee's work, just explain how things are going to go. I've got a couple of motions to dispense with early on about research priorities. I mean, research set-asides, priorities, and carryovers. So we're going to try and deal with those first. They should be pretty straightforward. After that, Lori's going to give a presentation. We'll also go into some of the committee work. After Lori's presentation, the advisors are going to speak. They've had several meetings. They're going to brief us on the advisors' positions. And then we'll come back to the committee's work. So if I can, if everyone turns to page, should be page 11, document number 6. Okay. For 2008-2009, the tax set-asides are suggested, the committee suggesting that recommended the same priorities for the 2010 set-asides. Since they still represent some of the most important research issues for the herring fishery and remain appropriate for the priorities for cooperative research. The track stock assessment for Atlantic herring scheduled for December of 2009 should yield an updated list of data and research needs that can then form the basis of priorities for cooperative research in the future. So at this time, we have a committee motion, which is actually number 7, Karen. Hopefully it's up. Okay. To recommend that the research priorities for the 2008-2009 fishing year be carried over for the 2010 research set-asides. And that's a committee motion.
Committee motion does not require a second discussion. Lori.
If I can just add a little just brief background so that everyone's aware. There is also a document in the binder, document number 3, which is a memo regarding the priorities for cooperative research and the research set-asides. This is in anticipation of the 2010 specifications. The way the schedule is with the stock assessment and the specification process, we're getting a new stock assessment. They're going to do a new stock assessment in late 2009. We will receive the results in early 2010. So the plan is to do just a one-year specification for 2010, and then once we get a new stock assessment, we'll do a three-year specification during 2010 for 11, 12, and 13. The timing of the research set-aside process is such that we need to go ahead now and identify the research priorities for the 2010 set-aside to get that process underway, even though we're not even going to deal with the 2010 specifications until next year. So the memo number 3 just kind of explains that, and on the third page of the memo you will see the 6 research priorities. They are the same priorities that this council approved for the 2008 and 2009 set-asides, and the recommendation from the committee is to simply carry those over to 2010, and then we'll do a whole new package of priorities and set-asides and everything for a three-year specification in 11, 12, and 13.
Thanks, Lori. Anything from the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Six. 16. Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries 16-0-0. Frank?
Okay, the next issue is the research set aside. Each year there's up to 3% of the herring tack that is set aside. It's fully utilized in Area 1. In Area 2 and 3, it's not utilized. So it's requested that it be returned back to the fishery. So with that, we have... Okay, the motion's up. Okay, committee motion to request that NIMS release the unused research set aside for Area 2 and 3 back into the fishery for the 2008-2009 fishing season.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion. Sally McGee.
Yeah, just clarification. So does that mean that the set-aside that would be allocated in 08 and 09 would be released within 08 and 09 and not something unused set-aside in 08 then released in 09? So are you talking about a carryover or are you talking about within the same year?
Lori or Frank? Lori?
Within the same year.
Anything further from the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries 15-0 with one abstention. Frank?
Okay, that concludes herring. No. Okay, with that, Lori's got a presentation for us. Are you all set? Okay, Lori's all set for that.
Okay, well, that was the easy stuff. I'm going to, in my presentation, just try to give everybody an overview of what happened during the scoping process and, for Amendment 4 and what issues were raised, and update you on what the committee's work has been thus far on the amendment. The main document that we'll be working off of today is the draft Amendment 4 discussion document, which I'm not sure what number that is. Is it number one? Okay. Document number one is the discussion document, and I'll be referencing various sections and pages of that document. I'll try to go as quickly as I can so that we can get into the discussion. For Amendment 4, we held a scoping period from April 18th to June 30th of this year and had several scoping meetings in various locations and in conjunction with a few of the other meetings that we held. We had a scoping meeting in conjunction with the herring advisors on April 30th, another one on May 22nd in conjunction with the Herring Committee. We had one on June 2nd in Portland the day before the June Council meeting. And then we held one with the Mid-Atlantic Council on June 10th in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And we accepted written facts and email comments through June 30th of this year. We received a lot of comments. This slide just presents a list of the various organizations and groups and entities that submitted detailed written comments. So you can just take a look at it. It gives you an idea of how many different stakeholders and interests there are that are following the development of this amendment. In general, we received, at the scoping meetings themselves, we had about 15 to 25 individuals who attended the scoping meetings and provided comments into the record. All of the scoping meetings were transcribed, and hopefully everybody's had a chance to read those. As I mentioned, we received about 20 to 25 really detailed written letters from some of those groups that were on the previous slide. We received 150 form letters from individuals who called themselves river herring advocates, and the gist of their comments were regarding concerns about bycatch river herring in the herring fishery. We received 634 batched postcards from members of the choir coalition. Those postcards were in support of catch monitoring 100% of the fishery, certifying landings, and creating inshore buffer zones. We received about 6,518 emails that were all very similar or the same in nature, all supporting buffer zones in the fishery and 100% observer coverage. We received 475 emails that were very similar or the same that supported measures that would require full retention of catch, set-asides for predation, and some form of a waymaster program for the fishery. And then poor Paul received 1,879 emails that we set aside, and they were all identical or very similar, supporting buffer zones for the fishery and 100% observer coverage. We also received a number of papers or reports that were submitted as part of the scoping comments and are in the record. Hopefully all of you have had a chance to look at these. There was a white paper regarding legal issues and management options concerning limited access privilege programs and quota allocation issues. That was submitted by Kelly, Dry, and Warren, who were representing some individuals in the fishing and in the herring industry. Also, the Herring Alliance submitted two reports, Out of Balance, Industrial Fishing, and the Threat to Our Ocean, as well as Empty Rivers, the Decline of River Herring, and the Need to Reduce Midwater Trawl Bycatch. Choir submitted a report called The Ocean's Keystone Species at Risk. Oceana submitted a report called Trophic Ecology of Atlantic Cod, Insights from Tri-Monthly Localized Scales of Sampling. This was regarding some comments that they submitted about forage and predator-prey relationships. Cape Cod Hook Fishermen's Association submitted a draft report for the feasibility of electronic monitoring in the New England small mesh midwater trawl fishery, which was a report summarizing some results of some experimental work they did with the fishery on applications for electronic monitoring. And the Hook Fishermen also submitted reports called Sea Change, Ecological Progress in U.S. Fishery Management, and Practical Approaches to Ecosystem-Based Fishery Management. In terms of the scoping comments themselves, in relative to catch monitoring, there was general agreement across most of the people who provided comments that we need to improve the catch monitoring and make it more real-time and more transparent. The industry provided some suggestions and recommendations for improving reporting and increasing real-time TAC monitoring, making it a little more real-time through the IVR system. There is widespread support for 100% monitoring through some combination of at-sea and shoreside approaches. There's industry support for expanding dockside monitoring and port sampling. This really relates to the port sampling that Maine DMR has been conducting. It's cost-effective and efficient in terms of looking at catch that's coming into various dealers and processing plants. The herring advisors met during the scoping process or during the scoping period and provided some comments and suggestions relative to all of the issues in the scoping document. And I believe the advisors will have an opportunity to convey some of those suggestions and recommendations following my presentation. And, of course, one of the big issues that kind of still remains unresolved with catch monitoring is long-term funding. This was resources and funding to support increased catch monitoring in the fishery was identified by a lot of individuals as a potential major issue. Bycatch concerns were raised during scoping. As I mentioned earlier, a significant number of comments expressed concern about bycatch in the herring fishery. River herring was certainly identified as the species of greatest concern through the scoping comments. In terms of the specific comments, a lot of people felt that we need more data and that we need better data. We need to be able to identify all of the species of most concern and identify hotspots for bycatch. A lot of suggestions related to redirecting funds to increase observer coverage, requiring that all catch and landings be sorted and weighed by species. Several suggestions for full retention or prohibiting discarding or dumping of bags at sea. A lot of suggestions to look at models from other regions in terms of weighing and sorting catch and certifying high volume catch. A lot of suggestions to get ASMFC involved and at the table to develop a comprehensive catch monitoring program. There was several people who felt that the states could be more directly involved in helping with shoreside monitoring. And the industry did raise some concerns about the potential bycatch of herring in the mackerel fishery. There were some comments and suggestions made by the advisors, which the committee has followed up on, and I will get to. Regarding annual catch limits and accountability measures, during the scoping process, the comments were generally supportive of the current hard TAC management approach in the fishery, and a lot of individuals felt that the TACs that we have in this fishery already, in at least in some form, represent annual catch limits, and they are already conservative. There was support for SSC involvement in setting ACLs and AMs, and a lot of suggestions to get some SSC input on predator-prey relationships and how they relate to the establishment of ACLs. Some suggestions for more accounting of predation and forage during the stock assessment for herring, as well as the ACL setting. Some recommendations to establish ACLs for other species caught in the herring fishery. Some of the suggestions for accountability measures included in-season adjustments, fishery closures, and paybacks or corrections for TAC overages. The industry submitted some suggestions or recommendations that the council consider ways to better encourage the full utilization of optimum yield from the fishery. This is really related to areas 2 and 3 where the TACs are not fully utilized. And a lot of concern was expressed about the timing for developing ACLs and AMs in this amendment, and concerns about when the final guidelines may be published by the agency so that the council can move forward on this issue in the amendment. Comments during the scoping period related to forage and predator prey included the need to assess and manage herring as a keystone species in the ecosystem, the need to incorporate new research. As I mentioned earlier, Choir had submitted a paper on cod feeding habits. There were other suggestions made. Suggestions for a transparent and adaptive process for incorporating new research into the stock assessment, as well as the ACL and AM process. Suggestions that the SSC look at ACLs in an ecosystem context. Some suggestions for closures in the fishery to protect predators or to protect the forage base for predators. And suggestions for consideration and evaluation of management measures relative to essential fish habitat. Quota allocation was the other big issue that we went out to scoping on, and this was limited access privilege programs, group allocations like sectors and or individual quota allocations. During the scoping process, the industry support for quota allocation was somewhat split. There was more support expressed for sector allocations, but not really overwhelming support for either, at least not during the scoping process. You can take a look at some of the votes that were taken at the Herring Advisory Panel meeting. As an example of that, the votes have been almost split right down the middle in terms of whether or not quota allocations should be considered in this amendment. The vast majority of non-industry, non-herring industry interests oppose quota allocations in Amendment 4. They submitted comments suggesting that we delay implementing quota allocations or establishing a quota allocation process until a future action because of the time and resource constraints that we're under to try to get the amendment done, because catch monitoring by itself is a huge issue and is going to take a lot of time to develop. And a lot of people pointed out the need that for the fact that we need better catch monitoring first before we develop a quota allocation program. The proposed December 31st, 2006 control date, it's more like a benchmark date for quota allocation in Area 1, was controversial during the scoping process. Some people supported it, other people did not. And again, some of the industry representatives submitted a limited access white paper that addresses a lot of the legal issues associated with limited access privilege programs, and I would just point you to that paper for additional information. Other issues and suggestions that were raised during scoping, as I mentioned earlier, include buffer zones. Most people are very concerned about the impacts of midwater trawling and pair trawling on the inshore areas. And some of the suggestions were to create a 50-mile buffer zone in the inshore Gulf of Maine and around Cape Cod to prohibit midwater trawling in that area. Specific management measures to address river herring bycatch. Some people suggested a prohibition on midwater trawling in the groundfish closed areas. Some people suggested a prohibition on midwater trawling across the entire fishery. Other gear restrictions were suggested, including restrictions on the size of purse seines and other gear restrictions for midwater trawlers, and a lot of suggestions for more research, more funding, and more money. So, the committee began working on the development of management measures for Amendment 4 pretty much as soon as possible. We started holding meetings during the scoping period to gather information and to sort of educate the committee members about some of these issues. And then as soon as the scoping period was over, we started holding meetings to review the scoping comments and start getting into the meat of the amendment. We had the advisors met on April 30th during the scoping period to provide their comments on the scoping document and the issues. The committee met on May 22nd, which was largely an informational meeting. We had a lot of presentations about the status of the resource, the observer program, and things like that, just to get everybody up to speed on where we are. And then after the scoping period, we held a big joint committee and advisory panel meeting to start working on the development of measures and to start paring down the amendment, take everything we got from scoping and start really identifying what was going to move forward in this amendment. The Herring PDT met on August 14th to work on some of these issues. The Herring PDT also had a couple of conference calls during this time period just to exchange information and get some work done. I also met a couple of times with some staff from the regional office to try to sort through some of the reporting and quota monitoring issues to bring forward some things to the committee. And then last week we had a big two-day committee meeting to really try to start synthesizing all of this information and bring forward some recommendations to the council today as to where we are and what the committee recommends that we really focus on in this amendment, and also to get some further guidance and feedback from the council to make sure that we're headed in the right direction as we continue to develop the management alternatives. I'm trying to move as quickly as I can. There's a lot of information here. So just to kind of give you an update on what the committee's done relative to the catch monitoring program, this is in Section 2.0 of the Amendment 4 discussion document. We are developing measures to improve reporting and real-time quota monitoring. These include changes or additions to the current regulatory definitions. There are definitions that exist for what is an Atlantic herring carrier, what is an Atlantic herring dealer, things like that. So we're looking at those definitions in order to clarify them and make it clear when you're in the herring fishery and you're engaged in certain operations and activities, what your requirements are for permitting and reporting and things like that. We're looking at some changes to the IVR and potentially to the VTR reporting requirements. We haven't gotten too much into the VTR stuff, but we've fleshed out some measures for IVR reporting that would increase the frequency from weekly to trip by trip. And also to change the reporting deadline from Tuesday to Monday to back it up a day in order to get the information for the previous week a little bit earlier and know where we are more real-time with the quota. ASMFC is working to incorporate state-permitted herring vessels into the IVR reporting. That was something that we had indicated in Amendment 1 that we would like to do, and ASMFC is currently working on that. And we're also considering some measures in this amendment to do some outreach and education. I mean, this is not a huge industry. There's really, you know, a pretty easily identifiable number of vessels and major dealers. And the idea is to maybe do some sort of an outreach program to get the vessels and dealers all on the same page with what kind of reporting they need to be doing. There's all kinds of different reporting requirements. It's quite complex. So the idea of doing some outreach and education has been brought up. One of the big issues with reporting and trying to get a handle on what activities are occurring in the fishery are transfers at sea. Right now, transfers at sea are allowed to occur somewhat unrestricted, although everybody is subject to reporting requirements. But transfers can occur between herring vessels, from vessels to carriers, and also vessels can transfer fish to non-permitted herring vessels for use as bait. There's been some concern expressed primarily by the service that some of these activities may go unreported and there may be some loopholes in terms of reporting some of the catch that's transferred at sea. So we are trying to clarify that in the amendment and also address some of the transfers at sea and possibly limit them or restrict them. Some of the measures include restricting them to only limited access herring permitted vessels, or at least requiring that a vessel have some form of a herring permit in order to receive fish at sea, even if it's just for bait. The amendment will continue allowing carrier vessels in the fishery. This is recognized as an important component of the fishery, but we may redefine or change the definitions of a carrier vessel to include both a carrier vessel and a carrier dealer vessel, which would be any carrier vessel that then sells fish for bait or to another entity. We're talking about also establishing a regulatory definition of transfer at sea for this fishery. There's a lot of activities that occur that it's not clear right now if they qualify as transfers at sea for the purposes of receiving letters of authorization and reporting and things like that. For example, if a purse seine vessel, brings fish on board and has extra fish in the net, and another herring vessel comes over and puts their pump into the net and pumps some fish onto that boat. There was no money exchanged. There were no fish that were bought or sold. It's not clear whether or not that qualifies as a transfer at sea for the purposes of the regulatory requirements. So we're trying to address some of those issues in the amendment as well. We are working on some measures to potentially streamline reporting. Right now, the industry, has to do IVR reporting, VTR reporting. There are requirements to call in and request an observer before leaving the dock for some vessels, declarations into and out of the fishery, VMS pre-landing notifications. So there are a lot of requirements, and they're kind of all over the place. So we're kind of trying to look at a way to streamline that as much as possible. One of the things that we would like to do is make declarations and requirements the same for vessels, regardless of whether they're going to be going out and targeting herring or mackerel, not necessarily to impose any regulations on the mackerel fishery or on mackerel vessels, but at least make it so that a vessel can go out and target herring and mackerel and be subject to the same requirements and not have to declare out of one fishery or the other and then get into trouble if the vessel declared out of the herring fishery to go target mackerel but encountered herring. It's very complicated. We're going to be reevaluating the call-in requirements for observers because that only applies in certain areas of the fishery. It was something that was established as part of the Framework 43 measures for the haddock catch cap. So we're looking at some measures to maybe apply that across the fishery and make it more clear and include additional options for how the vessel can notify the observer program. We're going to try to increase the efficiency of the call-in and notification requirements, potentially incorporate some of them into the VMS program. It's not clear whether we can do that or not. And there is a proposal on the table also to eliminate the VMS power-down provision for herring vessels. This is consistent with some of the other fisheries in the region that don't have VMS power-down provisions. And then, of course, the big ones for catch monitoring are at-sea monitoring and dockside monitoring. These get extremely complicated, and I'm going to get into this in a minute. These are two issues that the committee is seeking additional guidance from the council on. Regarding ACLs and AMs, the final rule for the National Standard 1 guidelines is pending. The comment deadline, I believe, was September 22nd. It's not clear when the final rule will be published. The hearing committee has not discussed this issue in detail. There's a placeholder in the document, Section 3.0, that's got a little bit of summary of what has been discussed. The advisors discussed it a little bit. The PDT has held some preliminary discussions, but we are waiting for additional guidance from the service on the implementation of the establishment of ACLs and AMs. The herring fishery, as I mentioned, is managed by hard TACs, but there may be some modifications that we need to do to the fishery specification process to make it consistent with the Magnuson Act requirements for ACLs and AMs, and we also may need to consider additional accountability measures. It's not clear if or how we may develop ACLs for non-target species. It hasn't been addressed yet by the committee. We've really kind of been focusing on catch monitoring. There will be an opportunity, I assume, to incorporate some of the forage and predator prey issues that were raised during scoping as may be appropriate during the development of ACLs and AMs. We do have plans. I'm actually planning to meet with the regional office staff in the relatively near future to discuss this issue and then bring something to the herring PDT, which we will then discuss with the PDT and bring to the committee. So this is sort of one of those issues that still needs a lot of development in this amendment. Measures to address bycatch. This is something that the committee has spent a good amount of time on in addition to the catch monitoring program. The first is with the herring and mackerel fishery interactions. This was something that was raised during scoping and something that's actually pretty well fleshed out in the discussion document, Section 4.0 of the discussion document. This is a concern about vessels in the mackerel fishery that did not qualify for herring limited access permits and are now restricted to 3 metric tons of herring, which is allowed under the open access permit. The committee has developed options that would increase the possession limit for the open access permit to potentially 10,000 pounds or 25 metric tons. This would be only in areas 2 and 3. There is nothing on the table at this point to increase the possession limit in area 1. There are options that may link the increased possession limit to the possession of a mackerel limited access permit so that it wouldn't increase across the board for every vessel in areas 2 and 3, but only those participating in the mackerel fishery. The Herring PDT has expressed some concern about increasing the possession limit too much in areas 2 and 3. The PDT actually brought forward the 10,000-pound option. The committee raised the committee suggested the 25 metric ton option, but the PDT is concerned about creating opportunities for directed fishing in areas 2 and 3. 25 metric tons is 55,000 pounds of fish, which for a lot of vessels is a directed fishery. And the PDT just wants to note concerns about increasing capacity in areas 2 and 3 and potentially compromising the intent of the limited access program that we just worked so hard to implement. And also, you know, increasing opportunities for directed fishing in areas 2 and 3 is going to allow new vessels, could allow new vessels to come into the fishery and create history, which if the council does decide to develop a quota allocation process for the or a quota allocation program for the fishery, those new vessels are going to be fishing for history and going to be requiring some form of a quota allocation. So it does just complicate that issue if that issue is ever addressed. There are recommendations to allow the possession limits to be adjusted in the future through framework adjustment, and we're going to explore how to possibly address this during the specifications. Right now, the data that we looked at and the data that's in the discussion document does not indicate that this is a problem. It doesn't appear that vessels are fishing, are discarding a lot of herring when they're participating in the mackerel fishery. But the industry's indicated that because of what's been going on with the mackerel fishery and because of concerns about bycatch, some of the trips may not even be occurring. So we might not be seeing it in the data right now. But as the mackerel fishery continues to expand in areas 2 and 3, this could become an increasing problem. And certainly in an area where the TACs are not fully utilized, we don't want to be creating a situation where there are regulatory discards occurring. River herring was discussed at the last meeting in great detail. The ASMFC technical committee chairman presented, and he's also PDT chairman, PDT member, Matt Seri presented an analysis that he did for the ASMFC river herring stock assessment, and it is called Estimating River Herring Bycatch in the Directed Herring Fishery. That report is in the binder materials. I believe the presentation slides are also included as part of the last meeting summary, so you can take a look at that. I'm not going to go through his report in great detail right now, just for time management purposes. In general, he took a look at all of the observer and portside sampling information for trips that kept 2,000 pounds or more of Atlantic herring. And while the information is limited and it is highly variable, it is clear that there is river herring bycatch to some degree in the herring fishery. There are a few incidents of large amounts of bycatch. There are a lot of incidents of no bycatch, but it is clear that there is some level of mortality occurring. The committee has reviewed all of the information, had some extensive discussion, and has two recommendations that you will be considering today. One is to request that the PDT craft alternatives for time area closures to protect the southern New England and mid-Atlantic runs of river herring, including the Cape Cod area. And another one is to collaborate as much as possible with ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic Council regarding the management of river herring. Okay, dockside monitoring. We discussed dockside monitoring in great detail at the last meeting, too. And the committee started by trying to identify the goals of a dockside monitoring program for this fishery. Initially, the committee started identifying as the primary goals for dockside monitoring, enhancing the collection of bycatch information and collecting commercial catch and biological samples for stock assessment and resource evaluation purposes. This all stems from the current Maine DMR port side sampling program. The Maine DMR port side sampling program is where we get all of our commercial catch samples from for herring stock assessments and for evaluating the spawning closures that ASMFC implements. And that program is, there's a lot of concern that that program is not going to be funded in the future. It's not a very expensive program, but funding is running out. And once the funding runs out, if there's no mechanism to continue that program, there will be no more commercial catch sampling, and there will be no way to evaluate the spawning closures. So the committee felt that the dockside monitoring program and this amendment should really focus on those issues. However, as we got into the discussion, some other suggestions were raised that maybe the dockside monitoring program could also be used to evaluate the effectiveness of management measures. For example, looking at groundfish bycatch in the herring fishery and whether or not the herring vessels should be allowed to fish in the groundfish closed areas. The audience and a lot of the people who participated in the scoping comment process and provided comments felt strongly that the primary focus of the dockside monitoring program should be to verify the total amount of landings in the herring fishery through an independent third party. So we sort of started out with the committee going towards, commercial catch sampling and additional bycatch information, and we kind of came back to developing a dockside monitoring program to verify landings, the amounts of landings in the fishery. The big issue with that is weighing the catch. This is a high-volume fishery, and catch in this fishery has traditionally and historically been estimated through volumetric measurements. And we spent a lot of time at the last committee meeting talking about weighing the catch and whether or not measures could actually be considered to require that every pound of fish that comes off a herring vessel be weighed and certified. That does not look to be very feasible. However, the committee discussed different approaches that we may consider for standardizing and certifying volumetric measurements. Somehow, standardizing the trucks, the fish holds, the totes, baskets, things like that, so that you know that, this particular fish hold has been certified to hold, 200 tons of herring, and so when it's full to this particular line, there's 200 tons in there. It's very complicated, very complex. We're definitely looking for additional guidance from the council on this issue and what should be done regarding dockside monitoring. I already mentioned the importance of the Maine DMR portside sampling program. There's a lot of interest in somehow incorporating that kind of an approach into this amendment. But, everybody struggles with how any of this is going to be funded. NIMS has indicated that, any dockside monitoring program that's established in this amendment needs to be accompanied with a mechanism for funding because they do not have the resources to support additional monitoring. They've indicated that just even an industry-funded program requires administrative resources to get it implemented and to get coordination with the agency, and the funding issue is huge. We really don't know at this point how we're going to overcome it. Not to say that we can't move forward, but we're certainly looking for ideas and suggestions on that as well. At sea monitoring, really focused on observer coverage. Committee had extensive discussion about observer coverage at several meetings. I want to thank very much Amy Van Atten and some of the folks that she works with at the sea sampling branch at the Science Center. Amy has spent an incredible amount of time putting together a lot of information for the committee. She brought the whole observer program with her to the May 22nd committee meeting, set up a booth with video and visual displays, and went through a very detailed presentation on how the current observer program works, what the sampling protocols are, how the sampling is designed, and what they've seen in terms of the sampling. Her presentation slides are in the binder as part of the meeting summaries. And at the last meeting, she went through a very detailed presentation that laid out costs for observers, what you get for your dollar, what you get here versus other parts of the country, where we are with electronic monitoring and what the potential applications for electronic monitoring are, and industry-funded observer programs that are established here and in other regions, what the challenges have been, and there are a lot of challenges. I would definitely urge you to take a look at her presentation slides. We didn't come out of that meeting terribly optimistic about industry-funded observer programs for a lot of reasons, and Amy kind of went through some of the challenges that she's dealt with relative to, and other parts of the country relative to, industry-funded observer programs. On page 30 of the amendment for discussion document are some measures that have been proposed to potentially improve the current observer program. These are just on the table for additional discussion and development. All of them are ideas that Amy or others have brought forward and may be incorporated into some of the measures in the amendment. And then the committee spent some time talking about at-sea monitoring and observer coverage. And this is, again, something that we're really looking for some additional guidance from the council on today. What are the goals of an at-sea monitoring program? How you design an observer program or an at-sea monitoring program depends largely on what your goals are. The PDT took a stab at it, and it's on page 27 of the Amendment 4 discussion document. And what we tried to do is just lay out an example of how you would design a statistical approach to sampling the fishery. And we used river herring as our example. And we used the SBRM methodology and the SBRM analysis to show you what levels of observer coverage would be required to achieve certain levels of precision when estimating river herring bycatch in the herring fishery. The take-home point with that is that the levels of coverage are going to differ for every species in terms of achieving a certain level of precision. You know, if you want to achieve a 20% or a 30% CV to estimate bycatch in the fishery, you have to go through the exercise that the PDT did for each and every species and look at where you are relative to, you know, the sea days. And then you need to start making some trade-offs. I mean, you're going to need a very, very high level of coverage in order to estimate bycatch for species that may not be encountered very frequently in the fishery. If the goal is to get, to use the at-sea monitoring program to estimate bycatch of all species in the fishery, catch and bycatch of all species in the fishery at a 20% CV, which is a pretty high level of precision, that was 20 and 30 were what was recommended in the SBRM, you're talking about a very, very high level of coverage potentially. With the available resources, it's just not clear whether or not that's going to be possible. So the committee really wrestled with this issue and tried to think about the goals for the observer program and whether or not it should be to accurately or precisely estimate bycatch and catch of all species in the fishery, or whether or not some priority species should be identified. it's a complicated issue, and the committee is looking for additional guidance. I mean, basically, where we ended up was that the committee wasn't clear if the council really wants the goal of the monitoring program for this fishery to be, to estimate the total catch of all species caught and landed in this fishery with some level of precision. And if that's the case, it's going to be complicated to get there given the available resources. So we're looking for, what are the priorities? Should it be the species that are overfished or overfishing is occurring? Should it be all species? How can we achieve a 20 to 30% CV? And is it even possible with the available resources? So this is what we're looking for additional guidance on from the council today. And this really relates to, I think, at sea monitoring as well as dockside monitoring. What are the specific goals and objectives? What are the current problems with the monitoring program that we're going to be addressing in this amendment? What are the goals and priorities for designing an at-sea monitoring program? How will the catch, total catch and bycatch of all species be estimated with precision and accuracy? Are we looking at primarily observer coverage? Are we looking primarily at dockside sampling, electronic monitoring, other ways to do it, some combination of all of the above? How do we prioritize at-sea monitoring versus dockside monitoring in terms of funding? And how can the catch monitoring program that we establish in this amendment be funded for the long term? If we're talking about requiring technology on the vessels, like video cameras, electronic monitoring, flow scales, anything like that, where is that going to come from? Where are the resources going to come from to administer the programs, collect the data, do the analysis, and disseminate the information? Okay, moving on from from that bright topic. The next issue that the committee has some recommendations on is the quota allocation program. This would be either group allocations like sector allocations or individual allocations like IFQs. The committee recommendation at this point is to eliminate quota allocations from consideration in Amendment 4. Based on the last few slides I just presented, I think it's clear that the committee has its work cut out for them when it comes to catch monitoring. And that was really the intent, the first intent of Amendment 4 was to address catch monitoring in this fishery. The committee agreed that it's going to be too time-consuming and too much to try to bite off in this amendment to try to deal with catch monitoring and quota allocations. Some of the committee members feel that quota allocations are a bit premature in this fishery since we have two management areas where the TACs are not fully utilized. Many feel that the catch monitoring program should come first so that we get a better handle on catch in the fishery before we start allocating the quota. The Herring Advisory Panel support for quota allocations has been split, but as you can see by some of the letters that have been submitted for this meeting, the herring industry support for quota allocations has been increasing, and at this point, in terms of the limited access vessels that are participating in the fishery, predominantly in the 1A, Area 1A fishery, there's a lot of support from the herring industry to consider quota allocations in this amendment, particularly sector allocations. So that is something to consider. The committee also has another recommendation that if we eliminate quota allocations from this amendment, that we establish December 31st, 2006 as a benchmark date for qualifying for history in Area 1A if a program is developed in the future. Basically just establishing, I don't know what it would be called legally, it's not really a control date, but it's some sort of a benchmark that would be formally established to say that if we do quota allocations in the future, we're only going to consider history in Area 1A through December 31st, 2006, which was prior to the establishment of the Amendment 1 Limited Access Program and prior to the Purse-Seine Fixed Care Only area, which has significantly changed opportunities for a lot of vessels in Area 1A. Okay, just to end, give you a quick overview of the timeline for the amendment. We've been working on narrowing the scope of the amendment and identifying the measures to continue to develop. At this meeting, we're looking for the council to approve the committee recommendations thus far, and to provide additional guidance and direction on some of these big issues that the committee is struggling with, particularly goals and objectives for catch monitoring, priorities for catch monitoring, and any guidance that the council can provide on what the intent of the catch monitoring program would be in this amendment. Then the committee will go back to work and try to develop the management alternatives that the council would approve for the draft EIS in April of next year. If we can get it done, I think April's still a bit optimistic, but we'll do the best we can. Assuming we get it done in April, the draft EIS would be approved by the council in September, and then we would go to public hearings late next year, and the council would select final measures in April 2010, submit the document in May 2010, and then immediately begin work on a 3-year specification for 11, 12, and 13, all of which would get implemented on January 1st, 2011. Again, I think that's incredibly optimistic, but that's what we're working under at this time. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. I'm going to go to the council for questions for Lori. I had a question, Lori. Both through the at-sea and dockside monitoring discussions that the committee has had and the APs had, one of the clear themes that you continue to highlight is the ability to fund such requirements, and you continually reference with available resources. Could you characterize what the available resources are to fund such programs? And if not, anyone else that feels comfortable doing that?
Well, I would definitely turn to the service for some information on that. I mean, my understanding is that the available resources are already spread pretty thin, and that we're doing the best we can with observer coverage and things like that as we have it. The way that it's been explained to me characterized from the service is that if we're going to develop additional programs in this amendment, we have to include the ways that those programs are going to be funded, because the service is not looking down the road and seeing a lot of additional funding to support a Waymaster or dockside monitoring program, or to support a significant amount of increased observer coverage in the fishery. I mean, there's always a process that we go through to identify priorities for observer coverage and to allocate the sea days. And certainly, as priorities are identified, there may be opportunities to increase coverage in this fishery if it becomes a priority, you know, and if the Science Center can allocate those days. But it seems like we're talking about something much larger here, and that's kind of where we get stuck, because when you get into something that's much more comprehensive, the long-term funding possibilities are quite limited. And I mean, another example is the Maine DMR portside sampling program. That's been a great program, and it provides a lot of information, and it's pretty cost effective, but that's funded year to year by ACCSP, and that funding is just not going to be there anymore at some point. And when it goes away, the program goes away.
Well, I agree with you that it's a much larger issue. In fact, I think it's much larger than herring. It stretches into all of the management plans that are, under the purview of this council. And I think the council, over time, is going to have to come to grips with the fact that the way we account for things is changing. We have to tighten up our ledgers, if you will. We're going to talk about this in groundfish tomorrow, and it's going to continue to come up in all the fisheries we manage. I think part of the issue is the cost, obviously, is prohibitive. And many council members have stated that they're not going to vote for something that puts an $1,100 a day burden on a vessel, given the status of some of the fisheries that we manage. And I agree with that. I think that's something that would be very difficult for me to raise my hand for as well. And you're right. We are competing with other priorities through the Science Center and through the allocation of observer funding or at-sea funding that is given to the Science Center. We're competing for other biological needs the Science Center has. But I think what I'm thinking about, and others have talked about, is catch monitoring as opposed to biological sampling, and whether or not we might need to talk about or form a committee here, and maybe even jointly with the Mid-Atlantic Council, to talk about, as we move into implementing the new Magnuson Act and the age of ACLs and AMs, should we talk about creating a separate corps of catch monitors that don't cost $1,100 a day? Are there ways for cost sharing across state lines to support the administrative side of things? And I think we're going to need to think about that rapidly or quickly, because the need for at-sea coverage, whether it's electronic or human, and the need to have better catch information, not just for us as managers of allocations, but also for assessments. Right? Better catch data improves assessments. So we're going to need to put our minds around that. So any questions for Lori on our presentation? Okay, Frank.
All right, yeah, next are the advisors. I think Dave Ellington's going to, if he's ready.
Good morning, everybody. Dave Ellington, Advisory Panel Chairman. I thought I was just going to give you a summary of our last advisory panel, joint advisory panel and committee meeting, but I have been asked to also give you a summary of the Herring Advisory Panel meeting that took place about 5 months ago on April the 30th. And that was, as I said, that was just a standalone Herring Advisory Panel meeting. There were 14 motions at that meeting, and I'll just go through those motions and the results of those motions. And if you have any questions at the end of the summary of the first advisory panel meeting, then if you could just refer to a motion number and ask the question, that would be easier for me to respond. For your information, there are 15 advisors on the advisory panel. And at the April 30th meeting, 14 of those advisers attended. Of the 14 motions that we had, 11 of them carried and 3 of them failed, and I'll go through those motions right now. You should have a copy of this summary document in your binder. I have no idea what number it is in your binder, but I'm sure you folks do. Number 2. Thank you. The first motion was that the advisory panel meet at the front end of any amendment process, and if possible that those meetings be combined with committee meetings. We had asked that we could have early participation, and that is what is happening. And we have had, as I said earlier, a combined advisory panel and committee meeting. So that motion carried 11 votes in favour and I think 2 abstentions. The second motion was a perfected motion through a friendly amendment, and it was that the Council provide the public with a summary of the Herring FMP goals and objectives at future scoping meetings. And I believe that's been done, Laurie. That's in that document. The third motion, and that was carried unanimously. The third motion was that the Council consider revising the current catch reporting system for the fishery to become more real-time for TAC monitoring purposes. There was a discussion, there was fairly good discussion about all of these motions, and that motion carried unanimously. The fourth motion was a perfected motion, and it was that the advisory panel encouraged the Council to consider a full range of alternatives for catch and bycatch monitoring. That perfected motion carried quite clearly 9-2 and 2, and obviously that is being considered, as you heard from Laurie's extensive report. The fifth motion, again perfected through a friendly amendment, was that the Council should consider alternatives for a stakeholder-funded observer programme, including a thorough economic analysis and input from the Science Centre on the level of coverage needed to manage the fishery. That motion carried 10-3. The sixth motion, to defer to the observer programme and the NEFSC to establish appropriate observer protocols for the herring fishery. That motion carried 8-1. The seventh motion was to include electronic monitoring in the range of alternatives for catch, ACL and AM monitoring in the herring fishery. That motion failed. 1 in favour, 8 against, and 4 abstentions. The eighth motion was to include a full retention strategy with electronic monitoring in the range of alternatives for monitoring the fishery in this amendment. That motion failed. The ninth motion, that the current shoreside monitoring programme established by the states, that's Maine and Massachusetts, should coordinate their activities to provide useful data to managers. That motion carried unanimously. The tenth motion was that the advisory panel feels that the current stock assessment and specification process in place for the Atlantic herring resource and fishery fully accounts for the role of herring as forage. And that motion carried. The 11th motion, perfected through a friendly amendment, was that the Council solicit advice from the NEFSC concerning the role of herring as a predator of other important fisheries resources under management by the Council. That motion carried. The 12th motion was to recommend that any vessels issued a limited access mackerel permit that do not have a limited access herring permit be allowed to retain up to 25 metric tons of herring as incidental catch in the mackerel fishery. That motion carried, and you heard from Laurie that there was discussion about that at the last committee meeting. The 13th motion was to recommend that quota allocations be eliminated from this action and addressed in a separate amendment. That motion failed. It failed 6-7 with the chairman voting to break the tie. The 14th motion, that any quota allocation program considered by the Council in this amendment be limited to Area 1 at this time. That motion failed. And those were the 14 motions. So if you have any questions about those before I go on to the next meeting summary.
Terry Stockman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. David, on the electronic monitoring motion that failed, do you have a recollection of some of the discussion and what the opposition from the AP were to the principles of electronic monitoring?
Which particular motion was that, please?
That would be motion number 7.
I'm just referring to the summary as you have a copy of it.
I know it was a long time ago. It's just
I can't remember what happened yesterday, never mind 5 months ago. So. There are some comments, whether you want me to read them or whether you can see them yourself, that really summarised the discussion that took place. You know, I have nothing further to add to what that discussion summary is showing you.
No, thank you. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, David, on your 12th motion that you referenced, to recommend that any vessels issued a limited access mackerel permit that do not have a limited access herring permit be allowed to retain up to 25 metric tons of herring as an incidental catch in the mackerel fishery. That was 9-0-3. I gather then that the advisors had no concern about additional vessels being able to qualify for entrance into the herring fishery down the road. I'm referencing in particular the comments that were made by Laurie a little while ago. So was there any concern about additional entrance down the road? In addition, has there been any rethinking of that position by the advisors since that meeting was held a few months ago?
Yeah, I'll have a look and see what the motions were at the next meeting that I'm going to summarise for you. But at that time, I think that there was certainly plenty of discussion as to how many vessels it would involve, and at the end of the day, there was comfort by the advisors that it wouldn't adversely affect the fishery. Okay. We met in combination with the Herring Committee on July the 30th. Between those two meetings, between the April 30th and July 30th, as Laurie said, there were at least two PDT meetings, or one meeting and one telephone conference call. And since then, there's been a Herring Committee meeting. So there were just three or four motions at this particular meeting. And the document that you have summarizes both the Herring Committee and the AP motions. I'm just going to pay attention to the AP motions. Again, just for your information, as it says in the document that you have, only 9 of the 15 herring advisors attended this particular meeting. I didn't attend it myself. I was under the surgeon's knife the night before, and it just couldn't quite make it. So I made it through, but I didn't make it to the meeting. Most of the initial motions were by the committee. The first AP motion is listed as motion number 4 in the document, to support the motion on transfers at sea as passed by the committee. The wording of the committee's motion was to eliminate the proposed measures eliminating transfers at sea and restricting transfers of herring at sea to carrier vessels only from further consideration in Amendment 4, but continue to explore other suggestions for measures to address transfers at sea. And I think we're still talking about those other measures. When the advisory panel voted on it, they voted in the same way as the committee and carried it unanimously. The second advisory panel motion was number 5 in the document, and the motion read, if there are observers placed on herring vessels, that they will be distributed fairly and equally throughout the range of the fishery. And that motion carried unanimously. The third and I think final motion... Yeah, the third and final motion of the AP, which was the same motion as the committee motion, that the council eliminate quota allocations from consideration in this amendment. And that motion carried 5-4. So that's a brief summary of the second meeting.
Any questions for Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dave. Dave, if you want to stay at the table to answer any questions or give the AP perspective, or if the you can sit back there and raise your hand, I'll call on you.
I've got to watch the laptop.
Okay. Right.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Lori did a very good job of summarizing the meetings that we've had. We have a series of motions. We have a few motions. The first motion, which will probably be the most contentious, I'll put it right up first. Should be number one, Karen. That the council eliminate quota allocation, group, sector, and individual laps, et cetera, from consideration in this amendment. I will note, as Laurie mentioned, there was through scoping, there was this comment had probably equal support on both sides, depending on how the scoping process went through. The advisors have voted on this twice on very close votes. The first time they voted to keep it in. The second time it was voted to take it out. There were fewer advisors there. When it came to a committee vote, it was a tie vote that I broke, that I voted to break the tie. Some of the comments, if you look at the committee document from the 30th, which I believe, I don't have the number on it. It's inside number two, it's the July 30th meeting summary. If you go to page 7, you'll see some of the discussion that took place. One committee member felt that he believed that there was not enough support in the industry to justify the delay for the catch monitoring for what would be needed to put in the allocation system. The industry support said they supported the catch monitoring. I shouldn't say the industry. Several members of the industry said they supported the catch monitoring and wanted it to go forward. They thought there was widespread support. It was noted that it may be difficult to do the catch monitoring with the information that we currently have. So I said it's been all over the board, not all over the board. It's been fairly equally divided. So I think this will be the most contentious one that we have up. And with that.
Committee motion does not require a second discussion. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to offer a motion to amend the committee motion that the council include quota allocations, groups, sector, and individual laps for consideration in this amendment. And I would just like to add for some justification. Since many of these discussions went on, we've had a season with a reduced TAC in Area 1A. This probably has created the greatest race to fish in the region that we've ever experienced, certainly in the herring fishery. The effort controls in the fishery are implemented through the state's plan. We met in April and made a plan for the fishery based on some projections on catch rates in the fishery. We had to, again, meet in July, meet again in August, and meet again in September. These are very contentious meetings, days out of the fishery, limiting the days in which vessels can land. It's a very awkward tool. It pits gear types against gear types, states against states, and it, quite frankly, it's a ridiculous way to manage a quota and a ridiculous way to manage the fishery. In the month of September, we were limited to approximately 4 landing days in the fishery. This is the height of the bait market demand. It's had a significant impact on the lobster fishery, and we just need to do business in a different manner. Analyzing some kind of sectors or quota allocations in which people can manage their businesses in this fishery is desperately needed by the participants in the fishery. Many people have opinions about whether or not we should do it or not do it, whether we have time or whether we know what's being landed. Well, as industry perspective, we do know what's being landed in this fishery, and we know on an individual basis, a vessel basis, and the data is there. It's really time to move forward, and the other part of it is, you know, if you're going to develop a monitoring program for the fishery, you'll get significantly greater buy-in from the industry if you combine it with some kind of allocation.
Do we have a second? Seconded by Dave Simpson. Dave. Frank.
If I can, I'm not sure we need this amended motion because I think if the first motion fails, that it's automatically in. So just a point of.
Yeah, you're right. But we can just let this go. And
okay.
It'll bring us to the same place one way or the other. Half full, half empty. Dave Simpson, you were the seconder. Would you like to comment?
Yeah, just briefly. I know earlier on we had talked about sectors, and I thought we might have reached a tentative decision to drop that for now, which is part of the reason I seconded it. But it just seems to me that the sector concept in particular provides an opportunity to address the bycatch monitoring, and perhaps create some additional incentive for managing bycatch, because if these groups have tacks and work together to minimize that bycatch, you solve a couple of things. You get, you know, you change the fishing behavior so that you minimize bycatch, because I think the industry knows enough about the whens and wheres to make a lot of adjustments to help the situation. And secondly, there's a pretty well established structure for the industry funding of monitoring in a sector scenario.
Dr. Pierce.
Mary Beth's motion to substitute, I guess, is a bit more difficult to understand than the original motion, since the original motion gets rid of it all. We don't have to deal with group, sector, individual, or LAPS, et cetera. But now with your motion to substitute, it begs for some clarification, because I would appreciate your views as to whether your motion is favoring one or the other, that is group, sector, individual, LAPS, et cetera. If all of those individual strategies for quota allocations are included in this motion, if it passes, I wonder where it leads us, where it leads the committee, because a sector is different from a LAP. My preference is the LAPP as opposed to the sector. But so that would be my question. Maker of the motion, do you care to be more specific with regard to what quota allocation you would like the committee to pursue, or are you content with just having the whole mix in front of us, knowing that with that mix, it may require more time for the committee to, you know, work it out and then come forward to the council with a specific, you know, recommendation as to how we should allocate quotas?
Well, I think that that discussion might be best at the committee level, exploring what the different options would mean. Certainly, we have a certain idea here in New England of what a sector means. Some other people in the industry have expressed interest in developing of a cooperative style approach, which is very similar to sectors but would be considered a LAP. If we were to develop a LAP program for the herring fishery, it adds an additional layer of Magnuson requirements that need to be considered. And I'm not sure that today we really know the answer of what's the best direction to go in. We've had some advice from the regional office on sectors not being LAPs. And we've also had the discussion that it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it is a duck. So I don't know if that's helpful.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, again, I would, with sector management for the sea herring fishery, I'm very leery about that at this point in time. And I'm very satisfied with the previous position of the council regarding our working on sectors through this amendment. And that was not to be the case. But I recognize LAPPs take time. And that's why this motion makes me uncomfortable. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like Lori to clarify something that she said in the presentation, outstanding presentation that she gave, and that is the timeline that she has provided, implementation by January 1, 2011, that's over 2 years away. That's an awful long time away relative to our needing to get some significant improvements in catch monitoring. Did that timeline include the possibility of our having the quota allocations in the amendment, or did that timeline indicate or that we would not be focusing on that as well? In other words, if we were to get rid of the quota allocations, would that timeline shrink up? And we wouldn't be looking at January 1, 2011. We'd be looking at something earlier.
No. I think that timeline's incredibly optimistic for just the catch monitoring and ACLs and AMs. We're pretty far off from having fully fleshed out alternatives for a catch monitoring program. I mean, we're still struggling with what are the goals and objectives. We have yet to even begin the discussions and development of the measures for ACLs and AMs. So I would say April, it seems really far off, but it's really not in terms of the amount of work that needs to be done, comment periods, submission and review times and things like that. We also have to do a specification for 2010 next year, which will require an environmental assessment. By 2011, there's three documents, there's three packages that need to be prepared: the amendment, a 2010 specifications package, and a 2011-13 specifications package. I would say to have alternatives fleshed out for catch monitoring and ACLs ready for this council to approve in early April is highly optimistic. Add on to that LAPs and sectors and various alternatives for those kinds of things. It's not going to happen by April. Not to say that it still couldn't be implemented by January of 2011, but I'd say we'd be well into next year working on all the alternatives. There's a little bit of extra room at the end of that timeline, between the submission of the selection of final measures and the submission and the review and the implementation. You know, we might be able to buy a couple of months here and there, but believe it or not, January 1, 2011 is really not that far away when you're talking about a highly complicated management action. I mean, it took us over 3 years to develop Amendment 1.
If it's not that far away, true, but in terms of our having to live with a couple more years of questionings about catch and bycatch, it's a long time. So you're saying then, I believe, that if we include the LAPs and all the sector allocation strategies, it's likely they would be beyond January 1, 2011, maybe far beyond. I'm putting words in your mouth, I know. But with what we've got before us, the ACLs, the AMs, and the catch monitoring, January 1, 2011 is optimistic. I'm assuming, therefore, that with the quota allocation strategies, it would be far beyond 2011.
Well, January 1, 2011 is our deadline for ACLs and AMs. So one way or the other, we need to try to meet that component. And then whatever other priorities for this amendment that the council does identify. I mean, I don't want to be, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on this one, but I've been through this process a few times, and I've actually been through the sector allocation process a few times, because we did it in Amendment 1 and then took it out at the final meeting. But it's going to take – it's very complicated. It's going to take a long time. And just looking forward to April is really – I mean, once we get out of this meeting and get through the holiday season, you're talking about 3 months before we have to have these alternatives, you know, fleshed out to meet that timeline. All I can say is that whatever priorities this council identifies, we'll do our best to try to meet the timelines, and there may be some wiggle room on the end of that timeline if we, you know, have a couple extra months here or there, but it's pretty tight.
This council never has wiggle room. So, Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for Mary Beth. Some of the proposals were for allocation, quarter allocations in just Area 1. Would that be another part of what would have to be considered under your motion?
Again, I think that probably is a discussion that the committee should have. Certainly there are issues by area in the fishery. Area 1, as I said earlier, is, you know, we have an extreme situation with a race to fish with a limited amount of quota. We implemented the fishery management plan in 2001 with hard quotas, and that area of the fishery has closed prematurely every single year since the implementation of the plan. It's become, you know, recently with a reduction in quota, much more acute, but is the area of concern. Area 3, we've not come close to attaining that quota in any way, so I really wouldn't anticipate that we'd want to spend a lot of time trying to figure out how you allocate what amount of fish that no one's ever caught. I mean, that does seem to be a waste of time. Area 2, we're a little closer, but Area 2 does create different challenges in that, you know, you have mackerel fishery interactions to consider, and I think if we saw some, if the committee had an opportunity to review the data, they could make some decisions about it at that time.
Jim Ivan.
Yeah, first of all, I think you need to change the word from to for in the motion. I'm very torn with this. Normally I support sectors and laps and individual quotas and group quotas and all those types of tools and mechanisms to rationalize the fisheries. However, this particular fisheries, we've just implemented limited entry. And normally you get to this stage several years after you've had limited entry and established. I don't know of a fisheries, or I can't remember of a fisheries that you did it immediately on top of establishing limited entry. And we've just qualified people. In fact, some people are under appeal at this point. The going to the limited entry scheme did and will bankrupt a couple of people that I know about. That's for sure. We've qualified some people. People have made investments based on that qualification. And if we do something like this and use the back dates, we're going to bankrupt additional people. And I'm very reluctant to do that. I think we need to let things settle out a little bit. I understand the race for fish. I understand the problems with that. So, again, I'm torn on this motion. I'll probably have to vote it down. The bycatch ideas about what quotas and sectors cure can be cured without doing sector allocation. You can do bycatch sectors. And it's been done in the West Coast that way well before they went to co-ops and individuals on the main species. So that is a possibility, and I think it could happen in the timeline that we're talking about. So I think I'll have to vote this motion down.
George Darcy.
Lori made one of the points I was going to make, and that is that there is a statutory deadline for January 1st, 2011, for this fishery to have the ACLs and AMs in place. So that certainly should remain a priority of this amendment, as should the monitoring and compliance aspects of this, certainly. But I think I can understand the reluctance in keeping ITQs or LAPs in this amendment, given the complexities of that and the timing issues. But I think at least sectors are worthy of further consideration, keeping them in at this point, with the understanding that the priority still should be the monitoring and the ACLAM aspects.
Sally McGee.
Yeah, I have a suggestion for a friendly amendment to the amended motion, and that would be to add to the end, so it would read that the council include quota allocations for consideration in this amendment that are based upon a significantly improved monitoring system. And I know significantly improved can be interpreted in a lot of different ways, but I think that that signals still that the priority in the amendment is monitoring, which, you know, I think we all recognize it has been a hang-up in groundfish, getting to sector implementation in groundfish, that if you don't have a decent monitoring system in place, then you're going to get nowhere with implementing sectors. So I would just suggest that as a friendly.
The maker and the seconder accept that as a friendly. Who's the seconder? Mr. Simpson.
Yeah, I guess I'm not quite sure I understand it, that the allocation of quota would be based upon improved monitoring. I'm not sure what that means.
Further explanation?
Well, what I mean is that the council is going to would develop quota allocations only if a decent monitoring system were developed. So it's predicated on a decent monitoring system, a significantly improved monitoring system. So it's not that the allocations are made based on some kind of formula related to monitoring. It's that you have to have a decent monitoring system in place before you can allocate it all. So if there's a better way to word that, then I'm open to that. But I think the linkage and the necessary precursor to allocation is monitoring, and I think that needs to be made clear here.
Dave, I think then just substituting predicated in place of based upon, that are predicated upon significantly, right?
I got hands up all over the place. Just a second here. Do the maker and the seconder agree? Yes. Okay. I'll let it go as a friendly. Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to say what the committee and staff and PDT really needs from the council is what are your priorities for the committee to develop three things? ACLs, AMs, monitoring, and sectors. And, you know, I mean, we cut to the chase. I think we have time to do two things. ACLs and AMs, number one, and something else. Because we only have 18 months. There's an eight-month review. So we don't have till January 2011. We have till, like, April to make the final decision of 2010. So we've got about 18 months to do three complicated things, which, you know, like Laurie and the committee knows, we probably can't. So I think the best thing to do is say, okay, committee and advisors, if we can do all three, fine. But the council should say, what are your priorities? What's number one? What's number two? And have the committee give them advice to work on number one first, get it done. That's ACLs, AMs probably, because that's a legal requirement. And when that's, and if we don't get to two or three, is a drop-dead date when we have to submit this amendment, and it's got our legal requirement met. So that's where that would be my advice, to just give direction on what's number one, two, and three.
Mary Beth.
As far as ACLs and AMs, there is a legal requirement, but we also have just finished a comment period on National Standard 1. And a lot of the comments that were provided to the service from around the country said that, you know, we have limited resources, limited times. There are these, you know, 2010 do this, 2011 do that. That the agency should really look around the country, look at all FMPs, and state up front which FMPs already meet the requirements and not waste the council's time doing that. The Herring FMP is one of those. Of course, we don't know what the response from the service is yet, but we have annual catch limits and we have accountability measures in the Herring plan. It seems like it could be as simple as changing terminology. And if the response from the agency, having considered all the comments from various regions in the country, says, okay, these are the FMPs that comply, it could take very little time for this council to bring this FMP into compliance with the ACLs. And we don't know what the unknowns are, but what we do know today is that the management of the herring resource in the Gulf of Maine, the area in which we're most dependent on, is a mess, and we need to do something about it. We do know that. And I think we just need to move forward and not try to anticipate what might happen in 6 months. We need to react to what we know today. And as far as implementing limited entry and not going to some kind of quota allocation system right away, I think we did that with general category scallops. We went from open access to an ITQ fishery. As far as considering people who have made investments, recent investments, I think that we do need to consider them and take that into account, but I don't think it's a stumbling block that prevents us from moving forward.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, to respond to Paul's guidance on for what the council needs to do to guide committee activity, I think, yeah, clearly the top priority is to get ECLs and AMs in place. Number two was the original reason for the amendment, which was when we decided to work on herring instead of whiting, it was because we needed to do an amendment to develop an industry-funded observer program. That was the reason for going to an amendment when we moved off of whiting again and onto herring. And so my only reason for my main reason for supporting or seconding this motion was that I thought sectors might be an efficient vehicle for developing an industry-funded observer program, because we can go ahead and design a great system, but maybe we can't afford it, who's going to pay for it, and so forth. And I just believe that industry has to pick up some of the burden and responsibility of this monitoring. I think it's just the way it's going to go in fisheries. And so my guidance to the committee would be, consider sectors in the context of addressing the need for monitoring. That would be the primary objective for it. Not so much the allocation component. I hear what Jim is saying about, is it the right time for allocation? So I'm not sure about that, but I appreciate the concern about it.
Doug Grout.
Thank you. I have a question and then a comment. And the question is regarding the friendly amendment here from Sally, and then the mover of the motion and seconder have accepted this. When it talks about predicating on the significantly improved monitoring system, this in no way limits the allocation time periods that are going to be used to time periods in which the significantly improved monitoring systems in place. For example, when you allocate, would you be able to allocate based on landings prior to, say, 2007, 2006? Or are you limiting it to using only that we can only allocate during the resource based on this improved landing system, so it would be after, you couldn't start allocating the system until afterwards?
Well, that's a good question, Doug. I think that's a separate issue, though. The time periods that would be looked at for allocation, if you look in the document, there's a couple different options that have been contemplated. And I believe we have a motion that puts a date in place that is the end point for which allocations could be considered. I go back to what Paul Howard said. If this passes, we're going to need to prioritize the work of the committee so that it doesn't jumble or mix up what it's doing, and it works on something until it's complete, and then it can move on to the next item. And remember, we have specs right in the middle of this whole process. We have a statutory deadline for ACLs and AMs. I disagree that this fishery is already compliant with ACL and AM, because to my way of thinking, if the standard is this fishery with self-reporting and voluntary reporting and monitoring, then we're all in trouble. So I don't agree. I think we need the catch monitoring to be better defined and implemented in order to feel good about this being an ACL AM compliant fishery. So we've got specs in the middle of all this work. We've got the ACL AM requirement. And then we're talking about creating a complex monitoring program at sea and dockside, which we've never done before. And then we're talking about allocation, too. So think about that.
Go ahead, Doug. So I'm going to take that as no, it doesn't limit us, and that we'll have some we'll be setting that time period in the future. And this is just sort of a priority setting. My second comment was I am torn on this, too, because having been had the honor of being the chairman of these days at sea meetings or days out meetings, I've clearly seen that the system that had been set up by ASM of Sea in the previous years, which had worked very well under our reduced quota, is broken, and we need some other issues. We need some other tools in which to manage this quota, and this could potentially be one of those items that could be used. I'm also very concerned about the priorities here. I agree with you that AMs and ACLs and AMs are the priority, and the catch monitoring, improving the catch monitoring is a priority. The thing that I do know is that the ASMSC at their annual meeting in 2 weeks are going to be working on coming up with additional tools within the ASMSC process through an addendum process to more adequately allocate this quota and make it last, spread it out over the entire time period. So with that in mind, I am leaning towards giving, not voting in favor of this, and allowing the ASMSC to try and come up with some solutions right now.
Dave Gavin.
Yeah, it's actually interesting to me to listen to this discussion, because everything that's gone on for the last 45 minutes indicates the schizophrenia we have surrounding herring. We basically have two different, very different groups of people that utilize herring here. You have 45 A and B permits that probably land 95-96% of the fish, and you have 42 and C permits and 2,219 D permits, of which maybe 50 boats actually land a herring at all, that land the other 4%. And yet, if we get into this motion, if we vote this motion up, we've got to divide up those fish amongst all those different people. And if people think they can do that in a couple months, I want to see it. The second thing I would say is we've compounded the problem by adding on the friendly amendment. This is the whole argument I have sometimes about the cart and the horse here. In this case, I think we've stuck the horse in the cart, and then we stuck a turbocharged V8 engine on the front of it and said, vroom, vroom, let's go. You build the improved monitoring system first. That's going to be difficult enough. We're going to spend 18 months on that easily. The arguments around that are enormous. And once we've got it built, then we've got to figure out how to divide that up amongst all those people and all those user groups again. I don't see that we have the time to do this. I don't think I'd be happy if we could get the improved monitoring system in 18 months. I don't think we got time to do that. So I hate to be the, Judge Grumpy here at the party, but, I think this is entirely unrealistic. Before we even, make a long story short, I'm going to vote against this amendment. I don't think we got the time.
Got Terry Stockwell, then Dana Rice.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary Beth pretty clearly articulated the difficulties we've had with the ASMSC days out measures this year. Dave Pearson, Doug, and host of others and I have all suffered through it since April, or actually March. But as Doug indicated, the commission is going to be the hearing section at the annual meeting in 2 weeks. We'll be initiating an addendum to address these issues. We intend to fast-track it, vote on it at our winter meeting, and have different measures in place for next year's fishing year. And while I'm supportive of the development of quota allocations, I'm not so in this amendment. I think the timing issues are extremely tight. Sectors are still very attractive to me, but they're self-selecting. We won't necessarily have all our monitoring problems resolved because we're going to have folks that don't want to participate. So what are we going to do with them? It's another host of issues that we struggle through with groundfish. So for that reason, I'm going to vote against this.
Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things, and I'll try to be brief. Obviously, I'm not in favor of this motion. The intent of this amendment is still the same. And we have a very – I'm trying to be brief. We have a very brief timeline, and if we include quota allocation into this, it is going to knock this amendment out in the left field, and we're all going to come up with an inferior product that we don't need. And I want to respond to the comments that we should probably do this because of the problem we've had in monitoring or allocating out the days you see in Area 1A this year. And that is we have had a huge problem, and the ASMFC is dealing with it. And the main user of this product, the lobster industry, had some struggles and is struggling due to the economy and the availability of bait. However, nobody that I know, I think I'm qualified to speak for the lobster industry, and I think I have the blessing of the lobster industry to speak on this issue. I don't know anybody in the lobster industry that wants to solve that problem by using quota allocation in this process. So I think that's a false argument, Mr. Chairman, and I just, without running on for hours, which I obviously can on this, I just urge everybody to vote, use a conscience and vote this down, and let's get back on track and get the best we can out of this amendment. And as in the future, let's look at quota allocation. I think it's something that needs to be done in the future, but it needs to be addressed by itself. It needs a lot of attention, and I just don't want to see us politicize and cannibalize this amendment and come up with something that disserves the herring industry, the lobster industry, and the resource. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that there has been a lot of interesting discussion and some interesting points brought up here, but I'd like to make just two. They've already been made in some form, but since we're going through some of these same things with groundfish, we have had a history of, I think I put it in the category of putting too many ornaments on the tree and then wondering why we failed to meet the deadlines. I've got a great deal of concern that this kind of thing can happen in this amendment. And we've talked about the prioritizing of the three issues that are there, and talking about putting the ACLs, AMs first, you know, the monitoring second, and then the limited access issues as third. Yet staff is sitting there basically telling us today that they only have time for two, you know, and I hear general agreement around that's the order of them. So I can't see that we're doing anything but getting ourselves in trouble by adding that third issue. Staff has already indicated that there's just not going to be time for it. So I would, in this case, I feel I'll have to vote against this.
Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a committee member, I think we're going to have our hands full with the ACLs and AMs, and just the monitoring part between the bycatch and what's actually landed, it's going to take all the time. So I oppose this motion. Hopefully we can streamline this and get it done properly the first time. Thanks.
Anyone on the council that hasn't spoke before I go to the audience? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am very strongly in favor of quota allocation as a management method, and I would have voted for this, but I'm confused and I'm kind of dismayed with the change in it because I don't really know what it means. If you're saying that the quota allocation is predicated upon a significantly improved monitoring system, the linkage there seems to say that the quota allocation would flow from the monitoring system instead of the monitoring system being a part of the quota allocation. So I find this to be imperfect, and for that reason I'm going to have to vote it down, and also in light of the other comments that have been made, particularly what Rip said. I think that as it's written right now, that it doesn't do the job.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience, and then I'm going to come back for council members to have a closing comment. First, Lori.
Just regarding the measures to be developed and the issues to address in this amendment, I just wanted to remind you that following these motions, there are some motions to add some additional things into the document, including measures to address river herring bycatch. And there may be other management measures that council members would like to see considered in the document. So it goes beyond really just, you know, one or two issues. I mean, I think we're going to be tackling a lot in this amendment no matter what.
Peter Moore.
Good morning, and thank you for recognizing me. And sorry everybody's got their minds made up, though I understand your points. But I would say I agree with what Mary Beth has put up for a proposal or for a motion. Sorry that most of you are apparently not going to vote for it. If that's the case, what I would request would be that given the letter that we submitted, which shows 20 active permit holders in favor of some form of either an LAPP sector group individual allocation program. And I was talking with a couple of people prior to this meeting, and there are more people apparently than we even found on this letter who are also in favor of some kind of rationalization in this fishery, particularly in Area 1 at this point. I guess I would request that the council, if you vote this motion down, that you at least consider allowing the permit holders and processors to get together and come back to you at a date certain to take the burden off the staff with one, two, or three possibilities for you to look at that are fully fleshed out. And if you agree with that, you know, I don't know when the next committee meeting is. Whether it's April, whether you need it by April, you know, what's wrong with that idea? Because otherwise, what I see happening here is that we're going to go down this road. We're not going to be able to revisit anything like this for God knows how long. You know, what is it going to be? It's going to be 2011 when we get some of this done, maybe two or three or four years later. It doesn't make any sense at all. I had a very interesting talk yesterday with Paul Parker about the latest brouhaha over haddock bycatch on Georges. And, you know, there's no agreements made on anything, but I said, you know, we really would look for your guys' support for some kind of incentive program. You know, we're operating legally out there. We have a haddock bycatch cap. Some boats are catching less than others on haddock. There are definitely ways of moving this fishery forward that takes out the sort of race mentality and also allows the captains to refine their methods. And so I beg you to at least give us, if this goes down, to at least give us an opportunity to come back to you at on a date certain. And if we don't have anything, then you can at least say, look, you know, you don't have anything. If we have something, then you can consider that. But it takes the burden off the council. And I just hope that you'll consider something like that. Thank you.
Anyone else? Gibb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. I'd like to oppose this motion. The plate is very full for this amendment, as Paul was telling us, 2 out of 3. And right now there are some assumptions that are going around about what's going to be involved in ACL AM development. And one of the things that's being lost, Mary Beth was making it very simple that it may be just relabeling, but the proposed rule talks about stocks that are in the fishery and that ACLs should be developed for all of the stocks that are in the fishery, things that are caught but not retained, caught and landed. And a quick look at some of the bycatch records for this fishery indicates that there might be 19, my math says 19 different stocks that are in this fishery that may require an ACL. So this is going to be, it can be a large undertaking to develop a system of ACLs for this fishery. So that's going to take a significant amount of work. I just don't think that there's resources to do this, and hope that you'll oppose this. Thanks very much.
Anyone else? Okay, back to the council. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There has been some reference to the state's plan and changing how we manage the days out of the fishery for next year. And quite frankly, this is a federal fishery. The landings are coming from federal waters. They're not coming from state waters. State water landings are extremely small. If this council wants to abdicate their responsibility to the states, I guess that's what we're going to do. Maybe we'll have weekly quotas next year. Maybe that will solve the problem. Then the industry will have to, you know, maybe we should have meetings once a week instead of once a month next year. I mean, this is just not the way to manage the fishery. And it clearly sounds like people around this table are not going to vote for this motion. And to me, it's a shame.
Anyone else on the council? Jim Otham.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think the friendly amendment made this virtually an impossible motion. I mean, you're admitting that you don't have data to allocate the fisheries, and you're saying we got to develop the program that gets us the data to allocate it, but then you're going to allocate it in the future. So I think the best way to do is to develop the monitoring program that gets you the data that you need to do an allocation and then do the allocation in the future. As far as bycatch, again, I think you could very easily develop individual vessel bycatch caps. It's been done a lot of places. The West Coast had that long before they had individual allocations. It's very simple to do. You got 40 boats. You divide the haddock bycatch by 40, and each boat, they exceed it, they're done. The incentive is for the boat to fish cleaner. I mean, I think you could easily develop that type of system and not burden the system in time-wise by doing that. So, again, I'll vote against this. Thank you.
Anything further from the council? Okay. I've asked for a roll call vote. Paul Howard?
Please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Rodney Avalo.
Yes.
Frank Blount. Rip Cunningham.
No.
David Pierce.
No.
Jim Fair.
No.
David Gaethel.
No.
Mike Leary.
No.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
George Darcy.
Abstain.
Terry Stockwell.
No.
Doug Grout.
No.
Jimmy Odlin.
No.
Dave Preble.
No.
Dana Rice.
No.
David Simpson.
No.
Mark Gibson.
No.
Mary Beth Tooley. Motion fails.
Okay, we're back on the main motion. Anything further? Anyone in the audience? Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall on the Bedford Seafood Consulting. Given the previous vote here and because, I guess, of the consideration that there isn't a lot of time or information to get this done, I would ask the council to consider Peter Moore's request that you allow the advisory panel and the interested parties that feel that there is a need for this to try and go forward and develop a parallel program that would possibly be able to adopt either a quota system or LAPP or something in the sector consideration. But I can't see just dropping it now with no determination of a future consideration for it. Like I say, if industry feels that they may be capable of bringing something before the council, I can't see why the council wouldn't support that. So I ask that as a future consideration following the final vote. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further on the main motion? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Twelve opposed. Four abstentions. One. Main motion carries 12-4 with one abstention. We're going to take a 10-minute break.